You know how everything's a subscription now? Music, movies, even socks. I swear if I...
To continue this ad, please upgrade to Premium Plus Platinum.
What? No, anyway, Blue Apron...
This is a pay-per-listen ad. Please confirm your billing.
Oh, that's annoying. At least with the new Blue Apron, there's no subscription needed. Get delicious meals delivered without the weekly plan.
Wait, no subscription?
Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Welcome to Speed City with John Massengill, Les Kaiser, and Jonathan Green. It's the fastest hour on the radio. Speed City.
All right, gearheads, welcome to the show. We just watched Max Verstappen win the Formula One Spanish Grand Prix. This is John Massengill sitting in the studio with Jonathan Green, Les Kaiser. We have Bob Varsha over Zoom, and momentarily we'll have Chris Medlin joining us from Barcelona. All right, gentlemen, Bob Varsha, let me start with you. What did you think of this crazy race?
Well, I think this race, more than any other one we've seen, had a little bit of everything. You had great drives. Some teams suffered heartbreak. Some teams came forward. Personally, I think Sergio Perez should have won this race. I mean, I understand the whole team orders thing. I know why they do it. But for Perez to be called upon three times to let his world championship holding teammate, Max Verstappen, come through, you know, Max gave him thanks, mate. You're a great teammate, all that kind of stuff. But how'd you like to be negotiating Perez's next contract, which is pretty much a process that's beginning right now?
Yeah.
And then you lay that on the table. You know, three times I was told to let the other guy buy. I sacrificed win. I did it. I want a raise.
Mm.
And I want my race car.
Yeah.
Great drives, a great 1-2 for Red Bull. Great drive by George Russell and for Lewis Hamilton, you know, who came from way back and hauled his way up there. Carlos Sainz went off and on and managed to finish in the fourth spot. His teammate Charles Leclerc had it all wrapped up until what was apparently a Ferrari engine problem. Now, we talked in our pre-race show, I raised the issue of, Valtteri Bottas losing a Ferrari engine in his Alfa Romeo on Friday. Now we had Zhou Guanyu in the other Alfa, maybe an engine problem. We don't know quite yet. Leclerc's problem apparently was engine related. So I'm wondering what's going on at the engine shops in Maranello right now.
Mm.
And yesterday in our production meeting, I talked about the fact that I thought maybe they were twisting those Ferrari power units a little bit harder to deal with the newfound speed from the Red Bulls and now from Mercedes. That's a question I'd really like to hear Ferrari's answer to.
Yeah,
we got issues across the board with the top three teams. Think about it. Mercedes at the end there. When's the last time you've heard a team radio that says DNF risk, slow down? You don't hear that very often.
Yeah, so they had both of them.
Yeah, to both cars. They both had water leaks. That's always fascinating how...
Temperature related, yeah.
Well, when you have a problem, how it's about to happen to the other car. It's amazing that the science and tolerances. But Jonathan, we also had, clearly we had Red Bull having issues. So you got Red Bull issues with their, you know, it's different from week to week. So Verstappen wins another race that he either starts the race and wins or doesn't finish. He doesn't do anything in between.
Yeah.
All these mechanical issues.
Yeah. And it's a consequence, I think, of the new rules
and
the new cars that they're still betting them in. Mercedes clearly have stepped forward of the upgrades. I mean, I asked a question at the beginning of the show, is this the day we say that they join the fight? And the answer is yes. And I think it's going to be one of the most open seasons. And when I relish the thought of Austin in October, because it's just going to be wide open. You can tell me different, but I think it's going to be wide open. There'll be still four drivers going for the title.
And among the other heartbreak stories we should mention was Haas, who had both cars in Q3, started in the top 10. Yeah. Kevin Magnussen had his collision with Lewis Hamilton on lap one, and I thought that was really Kevin's fault. But he and Mick Schumacher finished 14th and 17th, so not a day that the Haas team is going to remember fondly in terms of getting the best out of the potential that they had on the starting grid.
Yeah, a couple things on that. I noticed when Hamilton and Magnussen came together that Hamilton's car was pushing a little bit, Bob. You know, it was a little understeer.
Yeah.
So is that Hamilton going too fast into that corner? I don't know. I think that was probably the right call, you know, saying just racing incident. But what do you think?
Well, I think Kevin, as I recall the incident, Kevin was almost at mid-track. I mean, he wasn't anywhere near the left side verge to make sure that you didn't have a first lap type of incident that he and Hamilton had, you know, just because of crowding and over exuberance and all that kind of thing.
Yeah. Either way. I mean, when I see somebody, when a car's pushing, it's like, okay, you've gone too fast when you, especially in that situation, mm-hmm. when you're side by side like that, but you know, think of, and looking at Schumacher, not getting in the points, same thing with Schumacher and Bottas, both ran two stop strategies, which the Bottas said it on the radio. This is obviously not the right strategy. So if both those guys had run three stop strategies, maybe that would have been it, you know, especially with Hamilton having cooling issues, then he could have easily ended up ahead of Hamilton. And then Schumacher maybe into the points.
Yeah. Anybody want to guess how many total pit stops we saw today? 55.
Wow.
That's a lot.
When was the last time we saw 55 pit stops in a race that wasn't, you know, a wet dry affair?
Yeah. Mark Priestley made a good point on BBC Five Live saying, you know, if it's a water leak, what is it going to do long term to that engine unit, which could become critical as the season goes on?
Yeah. Anytime you get an engine hot in your road car or any car, you think, okay, did you just shorten its life? So, yeah, exactly.
And it was both cars.
Man, there's so much to talk about in this race. There were so many twists and turns. And right before we went on air, I said, okay, who's your driver today? And there could be, what do we decide? There could be a potential of five or six drivers that you could...
Yeah, I changed mine halfway through.
Yeah, because so you've got Verstappen who won with a broken DNS, Hamilton who came from the back, Alonso who came up, I don't know how many places, Perez giving up the position, George Russell who looked crazy
really good
fast.
And did some great driving.
When at one point when Russell was looking so fast, especially against Verstappen, I was thinking, is Russell maybe the fastest driver on the grid right now?
Some people would argue.
You could argue. It's a little early because the cars are not equal yet, but they're a lot closer than they were. So, man, this just was tons going on.
For me, Hamilton was the best drive. I mean, when you look what happened to Magnussen and then you see where Hamilton got to, they said eighth. You remember, he said, hey, guys, let's go get some sangria or whatever. Well, he didn't, but he said, you know, do we save this engine? If that was at about, you know, just after his own incident. So he was already ready to throw in the towel, and the team said, no, there's a possible eighth here.
Yeah.
So, well, If Lewis was the driver of the day, I'd give a tip of the hat to George Russell as defensive driver of the day. I thought some of those moves he was throwing on Max Verstappen, weaving down the front straightaway, were kind of sketchy.
Bob, would you give your vote to Perez, though?
I mean, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of sacrifice deserves, you know, attention. He outdrove Max. He had to keep letting him by.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah, and when Max comes on and says, thanks to my teammate, you know, I don't know, I'm trying to think of the right word here. It's like, you know that it's not really, I mean, he may be sincere in the moment, but it's like, you know, that you hate team orders, always. I hate team orders.
I've always have, yeah.
Yeah.
But you understand.
The name of the game is scoring points, you know, winning both championships. And there's only one that pays money, and that's the constructors. So if you get a 1-2, great. If your guy, your golden boy, winds up winning the drivers' championship, so much the better.
Well, you know, you make a good point, Bob, and you're absolutely right from a money point of view. But Sergio says, you know, I'd like to talk afterwards because he's on 85 points. He's ahead of George Russell in the championship, who's, 9 points behind him. You know, he's holding off there's every reason for him to want to be. It would be nice if he had 95 points today, because then he would be only, you know, 10 off Leclerc. And I mean, you know, there's an argument there.
Yeah, look at the point standing.
Definitely.
Look at the point standing in drivers now. So it's 110. It's really tight. It's staggered all the way down. 110 for Verstappen, Leclerc 104, Perez 85, Russell 74, Sainz 65, Hamilton 46. When's the last time we've seen it that tight? It that far down, yeah. And it's linear all the way down. It's that little percentage progression all the way down.
Well, and I think
among that many teams too.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And I think that's precisely, you know, Sergio's comment. You know, in he summed up everything that Bob started out with is, look at where I am. Look at the deliveries. Look at the team player attitude. Look, all the above, all summed up in. We'll talk later.
Well, it's a delicate one. I mean, you know, I said to you boys during the race, I mean, Perez has now found a home. He didn't have a driver, if you remember. And now, finally, Red Bull have got the driver they wanted for that position, which is to help Verstappen win titles.
So let's look at constructors. Now, Red Bull moved ahead in both drivers and constructors. They've updated that. So it's now Red Bull 195, Ferrari 169, Mercedes 120. You remember how at the beginning of the year, Mercedes looked, the porpoising was so bad. They looked so bad, but somehow they were hanging in there in points. Well, here they are. They're not close, but they're not near as far back as they could have been after the debacle of the beginning of the year.
Yeah, true.
Well, and you think about that. So it's 50 points, basically 49 points between them and Ferrari. So that's easily won over a couple of sets of podium finishes for the team. You know, if Ferrari isn't there. And so, you know, still definitely within reach. Championship, definitely still available.
Yeah, they have tamed the savage porpoise beast, because that discussion did, I mean, how many times did you hear porpoising today? Almost none.
Yeah.
They finally, who'd have thunk it that it would take till the sixth race of the season to get this figured out? That's crazy.
Interesting. I'd love to know the aerodynamics behind that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to dig deeper into actually what was the magic bullet, you know, that saved it.
You know, it probably wasn't a magic bullet. It was a combination of, like everything else in Formula One. It was probably all the different things. That's probably why it took them so long. If it were one thing, they could have figured out quicker. So, yeah, what about the rest of the grid here? So it's Verstappen, Perez, Russell, Sainz, Hamilton, Bottas, Ocon, Lando Norris. He had a quiet race. You hardly heard his name. And Alonso in ninth, Yuki Tsunoda, Vettel, Ricciardo, Gasly, Schumacher, Stroll, Latifi, Magnussen, Albon, and then Zhou Guanyu and Leclerc out. But man, Leclerc was, you know, what was his lead? Like 30 seconds when he went out?
Right. And, you know, I think that says a lot. When things are going right for Leclerc, they're good. You know, don't spin during quali, don't spin in the race, But Leclerc is also another quality driver. He's finally got the drive he needs.
All right. Sounds like we got Chris Medlin on the line. How's it going, Chris?
It's still hot. It's going well. It's going well. I'm running around the paddock right now, seeing who fancies a chat. It's another busy one as well. I mean, I said Miami was crazy, which was great, but it's good to see that even more traditional places like Spain are very busy in the paddock with guests and people, and everyone's still exciting. Not sure everyone's delighted though, because there were, I say, more Ferrari fans here in terms of Carlos Sainz maybe, but you know, they would have liked to see Leclerc win. And as you guys were just hinting at, that looks comfortable for him until he hit trouble.
And that's, like I said, Leclerc now is in a car that he deserved. And I really like that. He's doing great. It's been coming around to his feel. I kind of feel like this year, they made the tweaks that he needed for his driving style. And I think he's got I think he's up on the horse now.
Yeah, it's something we mentioned, didn't we, a couple of races ago, I think, where he said that in the past as well, because the car wasn't, you know, a race-winning car, the quickest car, he had to take risks and push it to try and gain an extra spot on the grid or gain a couple more points. But now he's got a car that is consistently at the front. He doesn't have to overdrive as much. I think we did see yesterday that, okay, Red Bull are right there, so they do have to push pretty damn hard. But it's a little bit easier when you know that each week you show up and you've got a chance of winning a race. You don't have to overextend yourself. So he seems to be a lot more comfortable this year. But he'll be gutted today. I mean, he did nothing wrong, but that's cost him the championship lead. And what a turnaround in three races.
Yeah.
I mean, I think his advantage over Verstappen was something like 50 points after Australia. And now he's 6 points behind.
Hey, Chris, right before you got on, we were running down the list of what we thought was five or six drivers that could at least be in the conversation for driver of the day. We left one off, guys. Bottas.
Yeah.
Bottas finished sixth on a two-stop.
Yep.
I mean, that's how awesome today's race was, is that you can have that many people in consideration for that kind of drive. That's fantastic. What do you think of Bottas' drive, Chris?
Yeah, that was a strong one. I quite liked his radio message as well. Once he lost out two positions within two corners to cars on the three-stop strategy, he's like, I think this might have been a mistake. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it was massively. I think if he'd made the same strategy, then he'd have been in the same fight at the end of that.
Yeah.
And there's every chance he still would have finished sixth. So I don't think it cost him enormously. It probably cost him a better chance of keeping one of them behind. And he maybe would have been able to take advantage of Hamilton's problem on the final couple of laps if he'd have made that extra stop. But I mean, that's unforeseen stuff, isn't it? So I wouldn't beat myself up too much if I'm an Alfa Romeo strategist on that one.
Yeah.
But they were quick today. There was a spell where you just wondered if Bottas was in the mix for a podium. Certainly when it looked like it's him versus George out on track, it would have been tasty. But
tasty. I like that.
I'm going to change the subject because I've got Mario Isola here and he's really scared that I've stopped him. But Mario, you and I spoke yesterday about strategies and we thought pretty much everyone would probably start on the medium tyre in this heat and the fact that soft wouldn't go so long. So when the tyre covers came off on the grid and there's only Lewis Hamilton on mediums and everyone's on softs, how surprised were you?
Yeah, that's interesting to understand because we had some, we heard some rumors in the paddock when Charles said during the press conference that he decided to keep one set of soft new, maybe to start the race. And probably people started to consider this option. And it was a surprise to see that only Lewis was on the medium, honestly, because we know that the soft is much quicker than the medium, probably. They wanted to keep the position and targeting 2 to 3 stops. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Was it a bit of a shame that we didn't get to see what Lewis could have done on those mediums at the start because he was the one that was different?
Yeah, of course. And we had also Magnussen that tried one set of hard. And to be honest, the pace was not too bad because it was comparable to the pace of Mick, for example, or other cars. So, difficult to understand why they decided not to use the hard and to increase the number of stops. Usually they do the opposite.
Is it partly maybe because of these new cars? And that, you know, we could see that, I mean, DRS wasn't too difficult today. It made overtaking possible in turn one.
Yeah. But we have seen in other races that overtaking is possible. It's easier than in the past. So with the simulation tools used by the teams, they consider how difficult it is to overtake and the strategy is coming also considering this element. As you said, probably here they were considering that overtaking was possible and maybe using soft and medium was the safest choice in terms of pushing for short stints and keeping the position.
And is it races like this where no one knows what the best strategy is that make for good races?
I think so. When you have a bit of unpredictability, it's always better. And so happy to see that we had a three-stop race with drivers fighting on a circuit that is not very famous for action on track and overtaking. So the new cars and the new tires are working well.
Yeah, it was great to watch. Mario, thank you. I'll let you get out of the sun because it is roasting hot here. I tell you, I'm stood facing it right there and I am cooking. So I'm going to try and find some shade. And Mattia Bonotto is just doing an interview nearby. I might try and grab him in a second because that's been a tough day for Ferrari, hasn't it? The car looked quick and then not even get a car on the podium at the end of it. That's going
to
sting.
Well, and to lose the lead in both constructors and drivers, that's not a good day.
Chris?
No, well, like you say, Red Bull's points haul over the last three races. It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Tell you what, let's try and get Esteban Ocon, who is probably not going to want to talk to me, but I'm just going to doorstep him anyway because he's a nice guy. And he's always smiling, so if he wants to tell me to bugger off, he won't do it because he's just too polite. Here he is. Esteban, points today from when the car didn't look all that competitive earlier in the weekend. Look, where did the race pace come from?
Yeah, exactly. It was a bit unexpected, I have to say, but I'm so glad with the end result. I think today, you know, the guys deserve to have both cars in the points because, you know, we didn't really show the potential of the upgrades that we were bringing since, you know, the beginning of the year. But in this race, you know, we've made great moves on the first in three or four overtakes. And then we settled, you know, in points position. So, yeah, it feels like a victory today.
And what was your favorite overtake in that first in?
well, they were not that spectacular because they were actually, I'm not going to say easy, but they were DRS overtakes, you know, because we were managing to have very good traction exiting last corner, and I could, you know, go alongside before turn one. So yeah, I would say the one on Danny was good and the one on Mick was good. But at the start with Lando, it was quite tight. That was nice as well.
And just finally, I mean, you've been in good form this season. I mean, you had a great comeback drive as well in Miami. Just how well do you think you're driving right now in this car?
I don't know. You tell me. I feel good. I feel like the guys are doing a good job around me of making me feel confident. And yeah, we should keep that going.
Oh, and also, how difficult was it physically? Because you've got a cool jacket on. Was it tough out there?
Yeah, it should be ice, but it's actually water now. So it's gone. It's finished. It was tough.
Well done today. Thank you for your time. Hey, Esteban Ocon, what a lovely man he is.
He is. Hey, Chris, we got to get a break in real quick. We're late for that. Back after these messages.
You know how everything's a subscription now? Music, movies, even socks. I swear if I...
To continue this ad, please upgrade to Premium Plus Platinum.
What? No. Anyway, Blue Apron...
This is a pay-per-listen ad. Please confirm your billing.
Oh, that's annoying. At least with the new Blue Apron, there's no subscription needed. Get delicious meals delivered without the weekly plan.
Wait, no subscription?
Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
As a rider, you know what you like. The power, the feel, the ride. When it comes to gear, you know what keeps you safe. Ducati Austin provides riders with the finest in day and easy leathers. The best the market offers. Visit Ducati Austin on Breaker Lane just east of I-35 and throw your leg over the most iconic sports bike ever built. Ducati. Even take it for a test ride or see what's been described as art on wheels from MV Agusta. You know what you like. See it at Ducati Austin. Online at DucatiAustin.com.
Winding Road Racing is your first and best choice for all the essentials for a great weekend at the track. We're racers, and we love helping racers. With a full selection of racing gear in stock, get geared up with all the safety equipment needed to meet all the latest Snell, FIA, and SFI regulations. Outfit your car with a comprehensive lineup of racing necessities, and when you need to find a few more tents, turn to data acquisition systems from AIM Sports, V-Box, and others. Austin-based with shops in California, Georgia, and Kentucky, the source for all your racing needs. Winding Road Racing, WindingRoadRacing.com.
Austin's Talk 1370.
Hi, this is Max Verstappen, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, so we've still got Chris Medlin out on the steamy, hot grid in Barcelona. Chris, any targets in sight there, my friend?
Oh, there's a couple. Whether they're going to talk to me or not, it's another matter. Got Toto Wolff in sight, but he's doing some TV interviews now. But Mattia Binotto might have a little chat with us. So hopefully we can find out what he knows about Charles Leclerc's failure. So just got to choose which one I want to hover around, which is never easy. I wish you could split yourself into two places at once. That would really help.
Chris, while you're hovering, what's your thoughts about Monaco? Who do you think are on today's form will be favourite to dominate in Monaco?
I'm not sure we'll get a favourite to dominate. I think what's going to be really interesting with Monaco is these cars are not easy at low speed. They're much more awkward at low speed because of the way they generate their downforce and the weight of them and the weight of the wheels, with the visibility. So I think we're going to see slower lap times, like much slower at Monaco than we've had for a couple of years. But I think it's actually been made a bit tricky because I'd have said that Ferrari probably with the package they had before here would have been the ones with the advantage, like with the package they had initially, where they didn't quite have the top speed to match Red Bull, but they were better in corners, that you think would suit them. But, you know, Red Bull have clearly made progress. Ferrari have worked on what was, I guess, a weakness in a way of their top speed compared to Red Bull. And looked good here. So it's going to be between those two. But interestingly, I thought Mercedes seemed to be struggling most in the final sector for a spell of this weekend. And yet they seem to think they're going to be strong in Monaco. Lewis Hamilton was looking ahead to it the other day. So I think we could get us in the picture to what we've just had, which is good. They're, like, if any one of those top three teams can get themselves in the mix with each other, and they're a factor. No one's just cruising by each other. So, yeah, I right now I put my money on a three-way fight for pole.
Hey, somebody just commented on YouTube. TB12 said, rare to have a race without a safety car. We hadn't even brought that up. That is rare, isn't it?
Yes, good point. Very good point.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that didn't help Lewis. If you think of it that way. That really didn't help him at all. Charles Leclerc is walking through, and I won't bother him actually because he does not look particularly happy as you would expect.
Yeah. Oh, go for it. But,
I pick my times. He's a very, very professional. He's doing some photos with fans actually, but I think I'm going to get his team boss because his team boss will know more about it. And Charles is definitely looking to hide in the motorhome already. But Mattia is not too far away, so hopefully I'll grab him to see what they know about what went wrong. No safety car was something that didn't help Lewis Hamilton, which is why I actually felt really bad for him on that final lap. When he had to give up the position of science because of the recovery drive he'd had was all based on the car's pace and his pace.
Yeah. I was just going to comment on Leclerc. He's an interesting character, isn't he? Where he's very hard on himself, but like you said, he's very professional and clearly very fast. I don't know. He's one of the fascinating characters in Formula One right now.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And sorry, go ahead, John.
No, please do, Chris. Go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, I mean, he's putting a smile on it right now, trying to put a brave face on what today's done. But he's normally very quick to bounce back from these things. He's very honest when he makes a mistake. But he also doesn't seem to let it affect him. If we look at yesterday's qualifying, he admitted he made a mistake at the chicane, came out, just replicated the lap without the mistake. And to do that without anything in the bag, you know, he technically was about to start P10 if he got it wrong again. There was a lot riding on that final lap, and it was a very, very impressive one. So he's got a good mentality, I think. I think he's able to judge himself very well and kind of know when to beat himself up and know when not to. I think today he's just disappointed. He's not beating himself up because he did nothing wrong.
Yeah, and I would argue that Ferrari finally have two drivers with level heads that will help when the classic Latin flair and pressure and worry starts things flowing around. I think both those guys will keep their heads, and I think that's important for Ferrari because we've seen Ferrari implode, Vettel being the latest version, and I'm afraid he didn't deal with it very well either when things weren't going well. So I think you're right. Charles is the kind of guy that will just he's harder on himself than anybody else.
Well, he's got he's got big pressure coming up. He's going to his home race where he took pole last year and then crashed and couldn't start the race. So I'm sure he feels like, you know, his hometown race in Monaco owes him one.
And he already had a spin last weekend. I was there.
And Jonathan, you're talking.
That's right. He got the crash out of his system.
Yeah. You were talking about that last year and this year. You're talking about how that emotion that just is kind of part of the DNA of Ferrari. But, you know, I was watching something on YouTube and watching Binotto and interview with him, and he's not that, you know, the leader that they've had in the past. He is kind of a more calm, more thinking Ferrari leader than before. And I think that's showing in the whole team right now.
You know, I watched Ducati for many, many years of motorcycle racing. It's a similar kind of attitude. And until Davide Tardozzi got there, it too suffered from being a brilliant team, but sometimes
I'm going to interrupt you there. Sorry, John, because I've got Mattia Bonotto right here with me to talk about today's race. And Mattia, firstly, do you know what happened he's just getting congratulated or commiserated, I guess, by Jos Verstappen. Do you know what happened with Charles' car yet?
No, not yet. Obviously, it's a power unit issue, but we need to bring back the power unit back to Maranello and we'll disassemble it tomorrow morning and let's try to understand.
And then with Carlos, was his spin just down to a gust of wind in the same way that Max went off?
We think so. Obviously, we'll have a clear look at the telemetry data, but apparently that's what happened. So quite unfortunate. Having said that, because then it damaged the car, he had some loss of aero performance, poor balance on the car, and then he had to fight for the entire race distance.
Well, then just finally, you had the pace, though. You did show it. I mean, do you leave here with at least optimism that the upgrades you've brought, you've got a very quick car still?
Certainly very positive, I think, because after six races, we can start assessing relative performance. I think we have been capable of doing a great car and as well to develop it with the first package. So the team is working well, and that keeps me optimistic.
Well, on to Monaco. Good luck there. Thank you, Mattia. there we go, Mattia Bonotto.
Yeah.
Was good enough to give us his thoughts. He's barely smiling, but he's trying. And yeah, Jos Verstappen was very polite there, just kind of saying hello to him, basically, and saying hard luck. So you could see, you know, they know Charles did nothing wrong and lost that race. But Red Bull are definitely going to take it, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yep.
Good timing on that interview, by the way.
I'm going to say, that summed up his level-headedness right
there. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. What else, Jonathan? I know that you were jumping up and down and enjoying this race.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it's one of the best Spanish Grand Prix. I alluded to the Michael Schumacher one, which was just a bizarre incident back in 1994. Obviously, you had that an amazing time in 2016 when both Rosberg and Hamilton took each other out on the first lap. But as Spanish Grand Prix go, that was a doozy.
Yeah, you said it can be processional from time
to time. It can, because it is such a strategy race. Mm-hmm. You know, once you get past turn one and you get into the middle section at in Barcelona, there's like turn nine, there's an up the inside move. But after that, you've got to wait till the front straight again. So you can have a lot of kind of strategic races. But I do think the 2022 car is giving us a lot better racing. Outside overtakes, and lots of them. You know, really, really impressive.
Well, I mean,
what about that George Russell move as well on Max Verstappen when it came back at him? Like the ability to do that, to throw a car in like that, that was, you know, back in the day that you just wouldn't have had a tire grip if you'd been trying to defend from someone to hold over on the outside like that. I thought that was really, really impressive and really exciting to watch.
Right before you got on, Chris, I was saying watching Russell right now, it's like he is as fast. I'm, you know, clearly right now we say Verstappen, Leclerc, you know, maybe Lando in that top conversation. But now that Russell's in this car, I mean, he is crazy fast and could be considered as good as anybody on the grid. Chris, do you agree?
Oh, yeah, I certainly do. I think one thing not to forget, if you look at the race pace of Hamilton from where he came from, like, he seems to just be more settled. I think, you know, the little gap at the moment between him and George is coming in qualifying trim when you've got to have the car right on the ultimate limit. Yeah. But when you just dial that back slightly and you can just leave a little bit more margin over a race distance, Hamilton's as quick, if not quicker, I think, than Russell. So that's a really exciting dynamic for Mercedes to have. I bet they're delighted with the way that's going. But I wasn't 100% certain of how it's going to go for George initially. I think because there was a lot of expectation on him, and I think sometimes it's unfair. It was the same with Checo when he joined Red Bull, and people just like change and say, "Oh, this is great! They're going to do so well." And you know, it's very, very hard to do. So I was kind of reserving judgment for a bit to see how George was going to get on, and I'm very, very impressed with the way his season has started so far.
Yeah. All right, gentlemen, let's get a quick break in. Let's hear from these messages, and then we'll be back with Chris on the grid right after this. Hey, guys, we are very excited to welcome our new sponsor, Allstop Brewery, to Speed City. These guys make a fantastic beer, and I'm going to let Jonathan talk about it, but I'm going to tell you about it. When I tasted it, I'm not a big beer aficionado. I like a nice cold beer, but I'm always worried about a craft beer or a new beer that it's going to have a funky taste, especially aftertaste. This beer was fantastic. I have absolutely no qualms at all that this is my new favorite beer. But Jonathan, you know why, what makes it so special, the water and the recipe?
Well, yeah, I mean, these guys have done their research and do it right, and they've even imported the right water to do it right. I mean, I tell you, this Allstadt beer, fantastic. And most Europeans are snobs about their beer, and I'm definitely one of those. Because
you're definitely a snob?
Yes, okay. About my beer.
Okay.
because there's no question, carbonation has always been my issue here in the States. It's overcarbonated. And our lagers, our pilsners and lagers in Europe, especially German ones, are not that heavily carbonated. And that's a key thing. And that's the first thing that hit me, was just how well they've done the beer. It's based out of Fredericksburg. It's got a great tie-in, because obviously Fredericksburg, a German town, and now they've got a Texas German beer, and it's cracking.
Yeah, and the facility out there, it's amazing. They've really done it right. It's really fantastic. So check it out. You can get it at all the local HEBs and everything else, right?
Yep. It's around all around Texas. You can get it. They sell it in on the shelf there as a Texas beer. But I'll tell you what, you're in, right back in Germany when you drink it.
And it's Altstadtbier, A-L-T-S-T-A-D-T, beer.com. Altstadtbier, A-L-T-S-T-A-D-T, beer.com.
Talk 1370, the right choice.
Hi, this is Karun Chandok, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
Chris, how's it going over there? You got a microphone in front of somebody yet?
Not quite in front of somebody, but I'm not complaining. I'm just waiting for Andreas Seidel to see if he'll speak to me, but it means I can stand in this shade, so I am more than happy to wait.
There you go. Hey, Jonathan, you mentioned that, well, first, the comments of processional at this track. But you also have been there enough times through the motorcycle world that probably is a contributor to it. Is that right?
Yeah, partly. I mean, the design of the circuit was originally, they've had to change it a few times as well. But, there's not many tracks in the world that are designed specifically, I say specifically for bikes, but it was a bike mad country, not a Formula One country until Alonso came along, really. So it was known as a motorcycle track. And that could be a reason, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of the aspects that make it interesting for a motorcycle, you know, the tighter curves, things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't necessarily translate to four wheels.
Nope, absolutely right.
Hey, Jonathan, while Chris is waiting, we got to talk about all the Americans and how they've done this weekend.
It's been awesome.
I mean, you talked about Jack Crawford a little bit, but you've got all those compiled, don't you?
Yeah, well, I can certainly tell you that all of them had good weekends, all of them in the top 10. Jack Crawford being...
And I'm rudely...
Go ahead.
I'm going to interrupt that summary to very, very quickly ask Andreas. So two questions then, if I can. Sorry, he's having a conversation in German right now. We're going to be very quick with him, but I've got two very quick questions for him. So they're trying. Someone else is trying to line him up. This is the life of a team boss after a race.
Yeah, he's in demand.
He's very much in demand. But the two quick questions I have is one, how's Lando feeling? Because I know he's having a health check now, having not been well.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, no, he didn't feel well all weekend. So a tough weekend for him, but he was battling it through. So can't thank him enough for the fighting spirit he has shown. Scoring four important points for us today. Obviously, it's not feeling great now after this tough race in these conditions, but we have very good medical support here in place as well. So it's important now that he gets a good rest the next 4 days and then we go again.
And he brought home points for you. He looked competitive. How did the race go from your point of view? Did you get everything out of it you think you could?
Yeah, I think on Lando's side, we pretty much maximized everything, I think, which was in our hands today. For sure lost a bit probably with Lando not being at 100%. So I'm happy with that. Could also see that we made a good step forward with the new package. At the same time, we have to accept the competition is trying as hard as we do as well. On Daniel's side, we need to understand what happened there because somehow he couldn't go the pace. Whenever we tried to push more, lap times were going up. And that's obviously disappointing, but that's something we need to understand.
Okay, well, Andreas, thank you very much for your time. He gave you that, more than that minute, I think, they had left before he needed to head off anywhere. So he's already been grabbed by one of the PRs that actually just come out in an absolute frenzy going, you're meant to be somewhere else. So we'll run down and see if we can find anyone down at Haas to talk about their tough day. Because we were talking them up on the grid, weren't we? And we were hopeful that it was going to be a good one. And sadly, it didn't seem to quite come together.
Yeah, Gunther, he'll give you even after a tough day, he'll give you some words if you can catch him. But
he'll give you a quote. Are you kidding?
Yeah. I want to go back to Andreas Seidel, head of McLaren, because he's one of the younger team principals, isn't he, Chris? Isn't he like in his early 40s or something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. And he's a really down-to-earth guy, very, very engaging, very honest, likes to chat to people, whether it's on or off record. Obviously a huge motorsport fan. And I think for him, it was a bit of a dream to get that move, to step across from having been in motorsport, but not in Formula One for a while, at least, to come into the McLaren role. So he was always positive at that point. The team's been on an upward trajectory. And maybe it's plateauing right now, but things got shaken up this year, and there's times that McLaren look very good, and there's just other times they don't look quite so good. But he's been doing a very good job, and he's got a good team around him, the likes of Andreas Seidel, James Key in there as well. They're a fairly youthful outfit in that sense, and it seems to be working well for them.
Jonathan, you got interrupted, and Chris, if we got time to run down that American list again real quick before you hit the Haas team,
go go for it.
All right, we'll see how it works.
Yeah, no, you jump in when you do. But no, I want to point out that Logan Sargent's now sixth in the championship, a fourth place in the feature race. You mentioned Jack Crawford, third in the championship in FIAF 3. Frederick's career all going well at the moment. And so the Americans having a good weekend this weekend, but they are very much in the hunt. And obviously we're keeping very close eyes on sixth place in the championship. And he's on 36, equal with Marcus Armstrong and one behind Lawson. And so just another good result for Sargent, and he could be vying for the top three in F2.
Yeah, Bob Varsha, what do you think about we've got all these Americans and any of those that you've been watching closely?
I can't say I've been watching them closely because they're hard to find here other than on the internet. But I'm delighted that so many young Americans are out there trying to do the traditional way of moving up to Formula One through the European ladder system, if you will, the junior leagues, as opposed to what Colton Herta is trying to do, which is to jump right from America's top open wheel series to the world's top open wheel series. And, I think it's great. I did an interview with a New York Times writer earlier this week who wondered whether Formula One's enormous explosive popularity increase hurts IndyCar in any way. I said, no, I think, the two things are mutually beneficial, because it calls further attention to motorsports in all of its forms, and it gives these young drivers opportunities. You know, Formula One is the toughest series to crack right now, simply because there aren't that many open seats that ever come up. IndyCar is a bit more flexible with some resources. You can find a place with a team, and if you do really well, then, you can impress the Formula One powers that be if that's what you want to do. So, I'm really glad to see these young racers go over there and, do it the old-fashioned way. Go race against the young Europeans and Asians and young aspiring drivers from everywhere.
Hey, Jonathan, who was it? Alex Palou that we caught up with at Miami.
We spoke to Pato O'Ward.
Oh, there was Pato.
Yeah, and we spoke to Callum Ilott.
But Pato said he disagreed
with that. Yeah.
He was like, no, he said that IndyCar needs to step up their game. Now
what he meant was because of Miami. IndyCar now need to look at what they're doing, and the celebrity was there. Formula One had arrived, and he was saying Indy need to step up their game because the competition has arrived on their shores, our shores.
Yeah, well, not only because of Miami, but he was referring to Miami and Netflix and the Drive to Survive. Yeah. So he was saying that that's a problem.
Well, and I'm not sure if he was the one, but one of the drivers had mentioned that if you look at things, really the big news about IndyCar all happens in May. And then it struggles for attention again the rest of the season.
That is the problem.
And, I'm not sure how to change that. Could having events, doing a lot more publicity, doing, Drive to Survive style of show, I think that's a definite item they ought to look at, is more kind of real behind the scenes. Access for customers.
Didn't I see something that IndyCar has engaged a company to do a Drive to Survive type?
Yeah.
I think I saw that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think that there was some news about it this week, like they've either signed a contract or something. So everybody's going to do it.
They were listening.
Yeah.
Well, Zach Brown's going to be an Indy, so he's voted where he's gone.
Yeah. There you go.
One of my big bugbears about this F1 schedule right now is the fact that both Indy qualifying weekend and Indy race weekend clash with F1 races.
Yeah.
It was always great to kind of be able to cross over a little bit and do both in some way, shape or form, as much as, let's be honest, what a day of racing, the 500 and the Monaco Grand Prix are together. But I just wanted to mention, you guys were talking about the young drivers. In the F3 race yesterday, in the first F3 race, there was a great spell. And sadly, it was 5:30 a.m. on the East Coast. But there was a great spell in that race where you had Jack was up in second place, Jack Crawford. Juan Manuel Correa was in third, and Caelan Frederick was fourth.
Wow.
And it looked like there was a chance of, for a split second, a clean sweep of the podium for the Americans. But sadly, two of those faded. I mean, Juan Manuel Correa is still recovering from injury after, I think it was a broken metatarsal, wasn't it, he had. So he's still not 100% fitness. So he did fade. And Caelan faded a bit too with his tyres, I believe. But Jack got that good result. But I remember watching that and thinking, it's a shame it's so early because America should be tuning in just to see their young guns going really well right now. And yeah, they've had a good weekend here.
Yeah, and add the Pity Faldies to it as well.
The who's? The Pity Faldies?
Yeah. The Pity Faldies. The Fitty Faldies.
Pity Paldy.
Yeah.
Well, I should probably clarify. So I'm not disagreeing with Pato O'Ward's view. I'm not saying that Formula One and IndyCar are equivalent, because they're not. Formula One is a globe-trotting series with, you know, 400 million viewers and $2 billion in combined revenues, whereas IndyCar is a domestic American championship. But it's the highest level of open wheel racing in the United States. So I think there's, you know, there can be some healthy interchange there. If Pato wants to come up with a strategy to make it the equivalent of Formula One, good luck with that. I don't think you can do it.
I'd like to hear Chris's view from what the other journalists have now said about Miami. Obviously, we got your view, but what is it, a win or a lose?
Chris, I want to save that for after the break. We're going to tease that because we do need to get a break in and hear what Chris has to say after this. Listen to Speed City. Back after these messages.
Motivation USA, catering to the sport bike enthusiast looking for truly unique parts and accessories. Stand out from the crowd. Motivation is the exclusive North American distributor for SC Project MotoGP inspired exhausts and the largest Rizoma retailer in the United States. Get the best parts from around the world at the best prices with fast shipping and a knowledgeable staff ready to help. Shop online 24/7 at MotivationUSA.com. That's MotivationUSA.com.
If you want to know where the path to Formula One and Indy begins, it's three simple letters, VRD. VRD Racing of Atlanta, Georgia are dedicated to nurturing young, single-seater drivers on their quest to the pinnacle of motorsport. Having just wrapped up the team's championship title in 2021 in the F4 US Championship, they also have programs in FR Americas, the all-new USF Juniors, and the Road to Indy. VRD is the perfect environment for success. To join the team, drop them a DM on Instagram at velocity_RD.
Talk 1370, the right choice.
Hello to everyone. This is Gunther Steiner. This is Speed City.
Jonathan, you had a question for Chris Bevan.
I did, yeah. Obviously, the dust has settled now on Miami, and I just wondered what the journos and the international media were saying about their experience in the USA at a brand new Grand Prix.
It was pretty overwhelmingly positive. It was a tiring weekend for everyone, but that was because it was so exciting, because it was so busy. There was so much to do. There was so much going on there. We had so much to cover. You're always finding your feet as well with, you know, where you can go, what you can do. But yeah, that, it was very, very positive. In fact, any negativity came from people that weren't there because they were jealous of everything. So yeah, we had quite a few of the journos that didn't make it out there for various reasons. Some had COVID, some had visa issues. In terms of, well, basically, one colleague, his passport never came back from the UK passport office, so he just couldn't travel, which really annoyed him once he saw how good it was. But yeah, very positive. And I think, to be honest with you, coming here this weekend and having kind of logistical issues around this race in terms of the traffic, like, they were not set up at this Grand Prix to handle the number of fans that came. They cut corners. So there weren't enough people directing traffic, marshalling things, organising things, sorting out schedules and looking after the food kiosks and the drink kiosks. People were unable to get water, and it's been, like we said, nearly 100 Fahrenheit. I think we touched that during the race. I saw it at 37.1 Celsius at one stage, so it must have been about that. And people are out in the sun this whole time. There was a lot that was because there weren't enough people here to run the show, basically. And that then made you think, crikey, they got it right in Miami. Even though there were teething issues,
yeah,
they're understandable when it's your first race. This was not the first race we've had in Spain. So no. As much as the action on track was great, and I think the fans loved the 2 hours of racing they got, I fear for them trying to get out right now. And I can see traffic jams wherever I look, actually, that from even from the paddock, you can see a few of the exit roads, and they are solid. So yeah, there's there's a lot to be said actually for how well Miami did with the first event, and the media were very impressed. They'll be critical if it goes wrong or when things are a bit silly, like the fake marina that still got brought up by anyone who wasn't there. But that's about the biggest bit of criticism there was, I think.
I think that'll change.
Yeah, if that's their biggest complaint. But Bob, you heard of a little bit of some of those teething pains, didn't you? I mean, look, it's not going to be perfect. It's too big of an event.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the day Disneyland opened, everything did not go smoothly. And they realized that they needed to look hard at what could make it better. And I think we'll see the same thing here. I'm not privy to all the details of the finances and so forth. They spent an awful lot of money and charged an awful lot of money. And that, I think, got up a lot of people's nose. I think they tried to do a big event like that in a different way, maybe the American way, by hiring subcontractors to handle certain parts of the ticket buyer's experience. And those did not always go well. I think they may have also hired from the local community to try to be a good neighbor, and that didn't always go so well. But as Chris was saying, you know, it was a first-time event. It was enormously ambitious. And I think, it'll get better and better. We're not going to have a former first lady in her motorcade holding up traffic. And hopefully they'll come up with some more spectator access. One friend of mine from Atlanta who spent an awful lot of money to go to Miami said he had to walk almost all the way around the track before he could find a gate where he and his friends could go in based on the tickets they had. And I think there probably ought to be some thought given to adjusting those ticket prices to make it, something that a more modestly resourced fan, should we say, can go, especially the young people, those Gen Zers who've now been all fired up by Drive to Survive and they want to go see a Formula One race. They don't want to be told it's going to cost you $3,000 to get into the place.
No.
I like that. That's a new phrase, modestly resourced. But Bob, you had, I'm going to segue into something that you put in our document, our show doc, and that's about New York. I thought that was an interesting story.
Yeah, that new New York mayor, well, new at the time, Eric Adams offered the Randall's Island, which is a large kind of recreation area. There's a track that used to hold a lot of very high class track and field meets. There's tennis courts and all this. There's a big open space where Eric Adams said, hey, why don't you go have a Formula One race here? Personally, there's two places that I thought could hold a Formula One race. One is Flushing Meadows, where the old 1964 World's Fair took place with the big globe and whatnot that we're all familiar with from Men in Black. And also, there is an unused, and here we're taking a page from the British way of going road racing. There's a decommissioned Coast Guard airfield called Floyd Bennett Field, which is on the south side of Long Island, within spitting distance of JFK International Airport, and all of these concrete runways.
Here at Blue Apron, we know exactly how hectic school nights can be. That's why we created Assemble and Bake, delicious one-pan meals that make family dinner simple. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients and put the pan in the oven to bake. Then you're free to help out with that last-minute diorama. Shop Assemble and Bake at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey guys, we are very excited to welcome our new sponsor, Allstott Brewery, to Speed City. These guys make a fantastic beer, and I'm going to let Jonathan talk about it, but I'm going to tell you about it. When I tasted it, I am not a big beer aficionado. I like a nice cold beer, but I'm always worried about a craft beer or a new beer that it's going to have a funky taste, especially aftertaste. This beer was fantastic. I have absolutely no qualms at all that this is my new favorite beer. But Jonathan, you know why, what makes it so special, the water and the recipe?
Well, yeah, I mean, these guys have done their research and do it right. And they've even imported the right water to do it right. I mean, I tell you, this Alstad beer, fantastic. And most Europeans are snobs about their beer. And I'm definitely one of those. Because
you're definitely a snob?
Yes, okay. About my beer.
Okay.
because there's no question, carbonation has always been my issue here in the States. It's overcarbonated. And our lagers, our pilsners and lagers in Europe, especially German ones, are not that heavily carbonated. And that's a key thing. And that's the first thing that hit me, was just how well they've done the beer. It's based out of Fredericksburg. It's got a great tie-in, because obviously Fredericksburg, a German town, and now they've got a Texas German beer, and it's cracking.
Yeah, and the facility out there, it's amazing. They've really done it right. It's really fantastic. So check it out. You can get it at all the local HEBs and everything else, right?
Yep. It's around all around Texas. You can get it. They sell it in on the shelf there as a Texas beer. But I'll tell you what, you're right back in Germany when you drink it.
And it's Altstadt Beer, Altstadt Beer.com. Altstadt Beer, Altstadt Beer.com.
Talk 1370, the right choice.
Hi, this is Kadron Chandok, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
Chris, how's it going over there? You got a microphone in front of somebody yet?
Not quite in front of somebody, but I'm not complaining. I'm just waiting for Andreas Seidel to see if he'll speak to me, but it means I can stand in this shade, so I am more than happy to wait.
There you go. Hey, Jonathan, you mentioned that, first, the comments of processional at this track. But you also have been there enough times through the motorcycle world that probably is a contributor to it. Is that right?
Yeah, partly. I mean, the design of the circuit was originally, they've had to change it a few times as well. But, there's not many tracks in the world that are designed specifically, I say specifically for bikes, but it was a bike mad country, not a Formula One country, until Alonso came along, really. So it was known as a motorcycle track. And that could be a reason, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of the aspects that make it interesting for a motorcycle, you know, the tighter curves, things like that.
Yeah.
Don't necessarily translate to four wheels.
Nope. Absolutely right.
Hey, Jonathan, while Chris is waiting, we got to talk about all the Americans and how they've done this weekend.
Ah, it's been awesome.
I mean, you talked about Jack Crawford a little bit, but you've got all those compiled, don't you?
Yeah, well, I can certainly tell you that all of them had good weekends, all of them in the top 10. Jack Crawford being...
And I'm rudely...
Go ahead.
I'm going to interrupt that summary to very, very quickly ask Andreas. So two questions then, if I can. Sorry, he's having a conversation in German right now. We're going to be very quick with him, but I've got two very quick questions for him. So they're trying. Someone else is trying to line him up. This is the life of a team boss after a race.
Yeah, he's in demand.
He's very much in demand. But the two quick questions I have is one, how's Lando feeling? Because I know he's having a health check now, having not been well.
That's right. Yeah.
No, he didn't feel well all weekend. So a tough weekend for him, but he was battling it through. So can't thank him enough for the fighting spirit he has shown. Scoring four important points for us today. Obviously, it's not feeling great now after this tough race in these conditions, but we have very good medical support here in place as well. So it's important now that he gets a good rest the next 4 days and then we go again.
And he brought home points for you. He looked competitive. How did the race go from your point of view? Did you get everything out of it you think you could?
Yeah, I think on Lando's side, we pretty much maximized everything, I think, which was in our hands today. For sure lost a bit probably with Lando not being at 100%. So I'm happy with that. Could also see that we made a good step forward with the new package. At the same time, we have to accept the competition is trying as hard as we do as well. On Daniel's side, we need to understand what happened there, because somehow he couldn't go the pace. Whenever we tried to push more, lap times were going up. And that's obviously disappointing, but that's something we need to understand.
Okay, well, Andreas, thank you very much for your time. He gave you that, more than that minute, I think, they had left before he needed to head off anywhere. So he's already been grabbed by one of the PRs that actually just come out in a absolute frenzy going, you're meant to be somewhere else. So anyway, we'll run down and see if we can find anyone down at Haas to talk about their tough day, because we were talking them up on the grid, weren't we? And we were hopeful that it was going to be a good one. And sadly, it didn't seem to quite come together.
Yeah. Gunther, he'll give you even after a tough day, he'll give you some words if you can catch him. But
he'll give you a quote. Are you kidding?
Yeah. I want to go back to Andreas Seidel, you know, head of McLaren, because he's one of the younger team principals, isn't he, Chris? Isn't he like in his early 40s or something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. And he's a really down-to-earth guy, very, very engaging, very honest, likes to chat to people, whether it's on or off record. Obviously a huge motorsport fan. And I think for him, it was a bit of a dream to get that move, to step across from having been in motorsport, but not in Formula One for a while, at least, to come into the McLaren role. So he was always positive at that point. The team's been on an upward trajectory. And yeah, maybe it's plateauing right now, but things got shaken up this year, and there's times that McLaren look very good, and there's just other times they don't look quite so good. But yeah, he's been doing a very good job, and he's got a good team around him, the likes of Andreas Seidel, James Key in there as well. You know, they're a fairly youthful outfit in that sense, and it seems to be working well for them.
Jonathan, you got interrupted, and Chris, if we got time to run down that American list again real quick before you hit the Haas team?
Go for it.
All right, we'll see how it works.
Yeah, no, you jump in when you do. But no, I want to point out that Logan Sargeant's now sixth in the championship, a fourth place in the feature race. You mentioned Jack Crawford, third in the championship in FIA F3. But Frederick's career all going well at the moment. And so the Americans having a good weekend this weekend, but they are very much in the hunt. And obviously we're keeping very close eyes on sixth place in the championship. And he's on 36, equal with Marcus Armstrong, and one behind Lawson. And so just another good result for Sargeant, and he could be vying for the top three in F2.
Yeah, Bob Varsha, what do you think about we've got all these Americans, and any of those that you've been watching closely?
I can't say I've been watching them closely because they're hard to find here other than on the internet. But I'm delighted that so many young Americans are out there trying to do the traditional way of moving up to Formula One through the European ladder system, if you will, the junior leagues, as opposed to what Colton Herta is trying to do, which is to jump right from America's top open wheel series to the world's top open wheel series. And, you know, I think it's great. I did an interview with a New York Times writer earlier this week who wondered whether Formula One's enormous explosive popularity increase hurts IndyCar in any way. I said, no, I think, you know, the two things are mutually beneficial, because it calls further attention to motorsports in all of its forms, and it gives these young drivers opportunities. You know, Formula One is the toughest series to crack right now, simply because there aren't that many open seats that ever come up. IndyCar is a bit more flexible with some resources. You can find a place with a team, and if you do really well, then, you know, you can impress the Formula One powers that be if that's what you want to do. So, you know, I'm really glad to see these young racers go over there and, you know, do it the old-fashioned way. Go race against the young Europeans and Asians and young aspiring drivers from everywhere.
Hey, Jonathan, who was it? Alex Palou that we caught up with at Miami.
We spoke to Pato O'Ward.
Oh, there was Pato.
Yeah, and we spoke to Callum Ilott.
But Pato said he disagreed
with that. Yeah.
He was like, no, he said that IndyCar needs to step up their game. Now
what he meant was because of Miami. IndyCar now needed to look at what they're doing, and the celebrity was there. Formula One had arrived, and he was saying Indy need to step up their game because the competition has arrived on their shores, our shores.
Yeah, well, not only because of Miami, but he was referring to Miami and Netflix and the Drive to Survive. So he was saying that that's a problem.
Well, and I'm not sure if he was the one, but one of the drivers had mentioned that if you look at things, really the big news about IndyCar all happens in May. And then it struggles for attention again the rest of the season.
That is the problem.
And, you know, I'm not sure how to change that. Could having events, you know, doing a lot more publicity, doing, you know, Drive Survive style of show, I think that's a definite item they ought to look at, is more kind of real behind the scenes.
Didn't I
access for customers?
Didn't I see something that IndyCar has engaged a company to do a Drive to Survive type.
Yeah.
I think I saw that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think that there was some news about it this week, like they've either signed a contract or something. So there, everybody's going to do it.
Maybe they were listening.
Yeah.
Well, Zach Brown's going to be in Indy, so he's voted where he's gone.
Yeah. There you go.
One of my big bugbears about this F1 schedule right now is the fact that both Indy qualifying weekend and Indy race weekend clash with F1 races.
Yeah,
it was always great to kind of be able to cross over a little bit and do both in some way, shape, or form. As much as, let's be honest, what a day of racing the 500 and the Monaco Grand Prix are together. But I just wanted to mention, you guys were talking about the young drivers in the F3 race yesterday. In the first F3 race, there was a great spell, and sadly it was 5:30 a.m. on the East Coast. But there was a great spell in that race where you had Jack was up in second place, Jack Crawford. Juan Manuel Correa was in third, and Caelan Frederick was fourth.
Wow!
And it looked like there was a chance of, for a split second, wow, a clean sweep of the podium for the Americans. But sadly, two of those faded. I mean, Juan Manuel Correa is still recovering from injury after, I think it was a broken metatarsal, wasn't it, he had. So he's still not 100% fitness. So he did fade. And Caelan faded a bit too with his tyres, I believe. But Jack got that good result. But I remember watching that thinking, it's a shame it's so early, because America should be tuning in just to see their young guns going really well right now. And yeah, they've had a good weekend here.
Yeah, and add the Pity Faldies to it as well.
The who's? The Pity Faldies?
Yeah.
The Pity Paldies. The Fitty Paldies.
Bitty Paldy.
Yeah.
Well, I should probably clarify. So I'm not disagreeing with Pato O'Ward's view. I'm not saying that Formula One and IndyCar are equivalent, because they're not. Formula One is a globe-trotting series with, you know, 400 million viewers and $2 billion in combined revenues, whereas IndyCar is a domestic American championship. But it's the highest level of open-wheel racing in the United States. So I think there's, you know, there could be some healthy interchange there. If Pato wants to come up with a strategy to make it the equivalent of Formula One, good luck with that. I don't think you can do it.
I'd like to hear Chris's view from what the other journalists have now said about Miami. Obviously, we got your view, but what is it, a win or a lose?
Chris, I want to save that for after the break. We're going to tease that, because we do need to get a break in and hear what Chris has to say after this. Listen to Speed City. Back after these messages.
Motivation USA, catering to the sport bike enthusiast looking for truly unique parts and accessories. Stand out from the crowd. Motivation is the exclusive North American distributor for SC Project Moto GP inspired exhausts and the largest Rizoma retailer in the United States. Get the best parts from around the world at the best prices, with fast shipping and a knowledgeable staff ready to help. Shop online 24/7 at MotivationUSA.com. That's MotivationUSA.com.
If you want to know where the path to Formula One and Indy begins, it's three simple letters, VRD. VRD Racing of Atlanta, Georgia are dedicated to nurturing young, single-seater drivers on their quest to the pinnacle of motorsport. Having just wrapped up the team's championship title in 2021 in the F4 US Championship, they also have programs in FR Americas, the all-new USF Juniors, and the Road to Indy. VRD is the perfect environment for success. To join the team, drop them a DM on Instagram at velocity_RD.
Talk 1370, the right choice.
Hello to everyone. This is Gunther Steiner. This is Speed City.
Jonathan, you had a question for Chris Medlin.
I did, yeah. Obviously, the dust has settled now on Miami, and I just wondered what the journos and the international media were saying about their experience in the USA at a brand new Grand Prix.
It was pretty overwhelmingly positive. It was a tiring weekend for everyone, but that was because it was so exciting, because it was so busy. There was so much to do. There was so much going on there. We had so much to cover. You're always finding your feet as well with, you know, where you can go, what you can do. But yeah, that, it was very, very positive. In fact, any negativity came from people that weren't there, because they were jealous of everything. So yeah, we had quite a few of the journos that didn't make it out there for various reasons. Some had COVID, some had visa issues. In terms of, well, basically, one colleague, his passport never came back from the UK passport office, so he just couldn't travel, which really annoyed him once he saw how good it was. But yeah, very positive. And I think, to be honest with you, coming here this weekend and having kind of logistical issues around this race in terms of the traffic, like, they were not set up at this Grand Prix to handle the number of fans that came. They cut corners. So there weren't enough people directing traffic, marshalling things, organising things, sorting out schedules and looking after the food kiosks and the drink kiosks. People were unable to get water, and it's been, like we said, nearly 100 Fahrenheit. I think we touched that during the race. I saw it at 37.1 Celsius at one stage, so it must have been about that. And people are out in the sun this whole time. There was a lot that was because there weren't enough people here to run the show, basically. And that then made you think, crikey, they got it right in Miami. Even though there were teething issues,
yeah,
they're understandable when it's your first race. This was not the first race we've had in Spain. So no. As much as the action on track was great, and I think the fans loved the 2 hours of racing they got, I fear for them trying to get out right now. And I can see traffic jams wherever I look, actually, that from even from the paddock, you can see a few of the exit roads, and they are solid. So, yeah, there's a lot to be said, actually, for how well Miami did with the first event. And, yeah, the media were very impressed. They'll be critical if it goes wrong or when things are a bit silly, like the fake marina. That still got brought up by anyone who wasn't there. But that's about the biggest bit of criticism there was, I think.
I think that'll change.
Yeah, if that's their biggest complaint. But, Bob, you heard of a little bit of some of those teething pains, didn't you? I mean, look, it's not going to be perfect. It's too big of an event.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the day Disneyland opened, everything did not go smoothly. And they realized that they needed to look hard at what could make it better. And I think we'll see the same thing here. I'm not privy to all the details of the finances and so forth. They spent an awful lot of money and charged an awful lot of money. And mm-hmm. that, I think, got up a lot of people's nose. I think they tried to do a big event like that in a different way, maybe the American way, by hiring subcontractors to handle certain parts of the ticket buyer's experience, and those did not always go well. I think they may have also hired from the local community to try to be a good neighbor, and that didn't always go so well. But as Chris was saying, you know, it was a first-time event. It was enormously ambitious, and I think, it'll get better and better. We're not going to have a former first lady in her motorcade holding up traffic and hopefully they'll come up with some more spectator access. One friend of mine from Atlanta who spent an awful lot of money to go to Miami said he had to walk almost all the way around the track before he could find a gate where he and his friends could go in based on the tickets they had. And I think there probably ought to be some thought given to adjusting those ticket prices to make it something that a more modestly resourced fan, should we say, can go, especially the young people, those Gen Zers who've now been all fired up by Drive to Survive, and they want to go see a Formula One race. They don't want to be told it's going to cost you $3,000 to get into the place.
No,
I like that. That's a new phrase, modestly resourced. But Bob, you had I'm going to segue into something that you put in our document, our show doc, and that's about New York. I thought that was an interesting story.
Yeah, that new New York mayor, well, new at the time, Eric Adams
yeah.
offered the Randall's Island, which is a large kind of recreation area. There's a track that used to hold a lot of very high-class track and field meets. There's tennis courts and all this. There's a big open space where Eric Adams said, hey, why don't you go have a Formula One race here? Personally, there's two places that I thought could hold a Formula One race. One is Flushing Meadows, where the old 1964 World's Fair took place with the big globe and whatnot that we're all familiar with from Men in Black. And also there is an unused, and here we're taking a page from the British way of going road racing. There's a decommissioned Coast Guard airfield called Floyd Bennett Field, which is on the south side of Long Island, within spitting distance of JFK International Airport, and all of these concrete runways. I mean, this place is just begging to be transformed into something useful. And it also has transportation links to the city and beautiful backgrounds, all that kind of thing. So, if New York wants to have a race, there's lots of obstacles, but if they can be overcome, I think there's plenty of places where New York could put on a good show.
Hey, Chris, you still down near the hospitality?
I am, yeah. I'm dancing, trying to make sure that I don't trip over Kevin Magnussen's daughter at the moment, who's cutely running around at the moment, because I've been told by a very reputable journalist, Jonas Hüttel from Extra Bladet, who is a Danish journalist, just giving him a plug, because he's made sure I hang around. He says Kevin and Gunther are just having a chat after engineering, so they should be out in a second. So I'm hoping that I can grab at least one of those. Before I do, Pietro Fittipaldi's just wandered out. So I might just say hello to Pietro and see from his point of view, having joined us on the show midweek, he's been here trying to stay cool. And it was a pretty solid weekend for your brother, Enzo. But let's talk Haas first. Do you know what went wrong? You've just come out of engineering, I imagine, and have heard the debriefs.
No, I mean, obviously, the first lap incident didn't help, you know, with Kevin, because then you're completely offset. You have a gap of, I don't know, 40, 50 seconds to the car ahead. So you're waiting for a safety car or something to happen to try to help that. But it didn't come. And then, we went, you know, on a two-stop strategy. And, you know, I think Alfa Romeo did it as well. And Vettel did it. But the other cars did a three-stop strategy. And maybe for a car, that would have been better. But it's, you know, it's easy to say now after the race. So I think difficult because I'm sure there was potential there to finish on the points. And just, yeah, it's a bit frustrating for, you know, the whole team. So definitely you need a good weekend in Monaco.
Yeah, we'll look forward to seeing how the team bounces back. But I'll quickly then end on a more positive note. Enzo had a good drive certainly today and a good weekend.
Yeah, really good. I mean, he finished second in Imola and then carried that momentum into here. He was super, like half a tenth off getting reverse grid pole in the first race yesterday. But he started 11th, finished 8th. And then today started 11th and finished 6th and had really good pace. The team executed really well as well with the strategy and pit stops. And yeah. I mean, let's hope that he can keep this up because I think, you know, he's a rookie this year. And yeah, I think he's doing a fantastic job.
Yeah, he really is. It was a good drive today. Thank you very much for your time, Pietro. He's going to go and get into the shade again. I'm still cooking. But yeah, I thought I'd ask a few bits. I imagine he's probably briefed not to just stroll out and tell me everything that was said in the debrief. So that was probably quite polite that you even stopped. But yeah, we're still waiting. So clearly pretty long conversation going on between Gunther Steiner and Kevin Magnussen at the moment. So I don't know if it's about anything specific to the race or to a bigger picture, or it could be something that's nothing to do with Formula One at all. But knowing that Gunther wants to escape pretty quickly tonight, it must be pretty important.
Hey, Chris, you talked about Pietro on the Wednesday show, and he was so great. Wasn't it fantastic to have him for the full hour of the show? That insight that he gave us was fantastic.
Yeah, he's a really, really good talker, really good at explaining things. I won't compliment him too much because he just walked by again so he can hear it. He's very, very good. And he was very honest and open and gave us, you know, opinions on pretty much everything. So, yeah, it was one of those where it was a big help for him to join us. We have some movement now with Haas team members in travel kit, so they are ready to go. Like I said, they want to get out of here pretty quickly. And I am just going to try and see who's coming through. Because how long have we got till we're going off air?
We're down to 2 minutes. We're almost out.
Yeah, we might be beaten by this one. But if we are, then I'll try and grab someone for the midweek show, like you said. So when we record pre-Monaco, we can tell everyone what went wrong with us.
Well, guys, we are almost out of time. Any final thoughts on today's race?
Great. Great Spanish Grand Prix. What a season.
Yeah, what a season.
Yeah, definitely not predictable.
Yeah. You agree, Bob?
Absolutely. Yeah, I thought it was a fun race. On to Monaco.
That's right. On to Monaco. That's a nice way to wrap this up.
Sailing.
Yeah. Okay. So you say on to Monaco. Any predictions, early predictions, Bob?
Yep. I'm going to arrive on a cruise ship and I'm going to have a great time all weekend.
That's the best prediction
I've heard. That is a fantastic prediction. Chris Medlin, thanks, buddy. We appreciate you hunting everybody down for us today. Was fantastic.
Thank you very much. I'm going to go and find some after sun and try and make my cool down by the time we're back on air in Monaco.
Go hydrate, my friend.
There you go. Travel safe, y'all.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in. Of course, if you want to follow us on social media, go to our website, speedcitybroadcast.com, because we got lots of good information up there. Thanks for everybody who tuned in on YouTube and Facebook today. And we'll talk to you next Sunday.
Happy trails.
Here at Blue Apron, we know exactly how hectic school nights can be. That's why we created Assemble and Bake. Delicious one-pan meals that make family dinner simple. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients and put the pan in the oven to bake. Then you're free to help out with that last-minute diorama. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit BlueApron.com/terms for more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Motivation USA, catering to the sport bike enthusiast looking for truly unique parts and accessories. Stand out from the crowd. Motivation is the exclusive North American distributor for SC Project Moto GP inspired exhausts and the largest Rizoma retailer in the United States. Get the best parts from around the world at the best prices with fast shipping and a knowledgeable staff ready to help. Shop online 24/7 at motivationusa.com. That's motivationusa.com.
If you want to know where the path to Formula One and Indy begins, it's three simple letters, VRD. VRD Racing of Atlanta, Georgia are dedicated to nurturing young, single-seater drivers on their quest to the pinnacle of motorsport. Having just wrapped up the team's championship title in 2021 in the F4 US Championship, they also have programs in FR Americas, the all-new USF Juniors, and the Road to Indy. VRD is the perfect environment for success. To join the team, drop them a DM on Instagram at velocity_RD.
Talk 1370, the right choice.
Hello to everyone. This is Gunther Steiner. This is Speed City.
Jonathan, you had a question for Chris Medlin.
I did, yeah. Obviously, the dust has settled now on Miami, and I just wondered what the journos and the international media were saying about their experience in the USA at a brand new Grand Prix.
It was pretty overwhelmingly positive. It was a tiring weekend for everyone, but that was because it was so exciting, because it was so busy. There was so much to do. There was so much going on there. We had so much to cover. You're always finding your feet as well with, you know, where you can go, what you can do. But yeah, that, it was very, very positive. In fact, any negativity came from people that weren't there because they were jealous of everything. So yeah, we had quite a few of the journos that didn't make it out there for various reasons. Some had COVID, some had visa issues in terms of, well, basically one colleague, his passport never came back from the UK passport office. So he just couldn't travel, which really annoyed him once he saw how good it was. But yeah, very positive. And I think, to be honest with you, coming here this weekend and having kind of logistical issues around this race in terms of the traffic, like, they were not set up at this Grand Prix to handle the number of fans that came. They cut corners. So there weren't enough people directing traffic, marshalling things, organising things, sorting out schedules and looking after the food kiosks and the drink kiosks. People were unable to get water, and it's been, like we said, nearly 100 Fahrenheit. I think we touched that during the race. I saw it at 37.1 Celsius at one stage, so it must have been about that. And people are out in the sun this whole time. There was a lot that was because there weren't enough people here to run the show, basically. And that then made you think, crikey, they got it right in Miami. Even though there were teething issues,
yeah,
they're understandable when it's your first race. This was not the first race we've had in Spain. So as much as the action on track was great, and I think the fans loved the 2 hours of racing they got, I fear for them trying to get out right now. And I can see traffic jams wherever I look, actually, that from the paddock, you can see a few of the exit roads, and they are solid. So yeah, there's a lot to be said actually for how well Miami did with the first event, and yeah, the media were very impressed. They'll be critical if it goes wrong or when things are a bit silly, like the fake marina that still got brought up by anyone who wasn't there. But that's about the biggest bit of criticism there was, I think.
I think that'll change.
Yeah, if that's their biggest complaint. But Bob, you heard of a little bit of some of those teething pains, didn't you? I mean, look, it's not going to be perfect. It's too big of an event.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the day Disneyland opened, everything did not go smoothly. And they realized that they needed to look hard at what could make it better. And I think we'll see the same thing here. I'm not privy to all the details of the finances and so forth. They spent an awful lot of money and charged an awful lot of money. And that, I think, got up a lot of people's nose. I think they tried to do a big event like that in a different way, maybe the American way, by hiring subcontractors to handle certain parts of the ticket buyer's experience. And those did not always go well. I think they may have also hired from the local community to try to be a good neighbor, and that didn't always go so well. But as Chris was saying, you know, it was a first-time event. It was enormously ambitious, and I think you know, it'll get better and better. You know, we're not going to have a former first lady in her motorcade holding up traffic, and you know, hopefully they'll come up with some more spectator access. One friend of mine from Atlanta who spent an awful lot of money to go to Miami said he had to walk almost all the way around the track before he could find a gate where he and his friends could go in based on the tickets they had. And I think there probably ought to be some thought given to adjusting those ticket prices to make it, you know, something that a more modestly resourced fan, should we say, you know, can go, especially the young people, those Gen Zers who've now been all fired up by Drive to Survive, and they want to go see a Formula One race. They don't want to be told it's going to cost you $3,000 to get into the place.
No. I like that. That's a new phrase, modestly resourced. But Bob, you had, I'm going to segue into something that you put in our document, our show doc, and that's about New York. I thought that was an interesting story.
Yeah, that new New York mayor, well, new at the time, Eric Adams,
yeah.
offered the Randall's Island, which is a large kind of recreation area. There's a track that used to hold a lot of very high class track and field meets. There's tennis courts and all this. There's a big open space where Eric Adams said, hey, why don't you go have a Formula One race here? Personally, there's two places that I thought could hold a Formula One race. One is Flushing Meadows, where the old 1964 World's Fair took place with the, you know, the big globe and whatnot that we're all familiar with from Men in Black. And also there is an unused, and here we're taking a page from the British way of going road racing. There's a decommissioned Coast Guard airfield called Floyd Bennett Field, which is on the south side of Long Island, within spitting distance of JFK International Airport, and all of these concrete runways. I mean, this place is just begging to be transformed into something useful. And it also has transportation links to the city and beautiful backgrounds, all that kind of thing. So, you know, if New York wants to have a race, there's lots of obstacles, but if they can be overcome, I think there's plenty of places where New York could put on a good show.
Hey, Chris, you still down near the hospitality?
I am, yeah. I'm dancing, trying to make sure that I don't trip over Kevin Magnussen's daughter at the moment, who's cutely running around at the moment, because I've been told by a very reputable journalist, Jonas Hüttel from Extra Bladet, who is a Danish journalist, just giving him a plug, because he's made sure I hang around. He says Kevin and Gunther are just having a chat after engineering, so they should be out in a second. So I'm hoping that I can grab at least one of those. Before I do, yeah, Pietro Fittipaldi's just wandered out. So I might just say hello to Pietro and see from his point of view, having joined us on the show midweek, he's been here trying to stay cool. And it was a pretty solid weekend for your brother, Enzo, but let's talk Haas first. Do you know what went wrong? You've just come out of engineering, I imagine, and have heard the debriefs.
No, I mean, obviously the first lap incident didn't help, you know, with Kevin, because then you're completely offset. You have a gap of, I don't know, 40, 50 seconds to the car ahead. So you're waiting for a safety car or something to happen to try to help that, but it didn't come. And then, we went, you know, on a two-stop strategy and, you know, I think Alfa Romeo did it as well and Vettel did it, but the other cars did a three-stop strategy and maybe for a car that would have been better. But it's, you know, it's easy to say now after the race. So I think difficult because I'm sure there was potential there to finish on the points and just, yeah, it's a bit frustrating for, you know, the whole team. So definitely need a good weekend in Monaco.
Yeah, we'll look forward to seeing how the team bounces back. But I'll quickly then end on a more positive note. Enzo had a good drive certainly today and a good weekend.
Yeah, really good. I mean, he finished second in Imola and then carried that momentum into here. He was super, like half a tenth off getting reverse grid pole in the first race yesterday. But he started 11th, finished 8th. And then today started 11th and finished 6th and had really good pace. The team executed really well as well with the strategy and pit stops. And I mean, let's hope that he can keep this up, because I think, you know, he's a rookie this year. And yeah, I think he's doing a fantastic job.
Yeah, he really is. It was a good drive today. Thank you very much for your time, Pietro. He's going to go and get into the shade again. I'm still cooking. But yeah, I thought I'd ask a few bits. I imagine he's probably briefed not to just stroll out and tell me everything that was said in the debrief. So that was probably quite polite that he even stopped. But yeah, we're still waiting. So clearly a pretty long conversation going on between Günther Steiner and Kevin Magnussen at the moment. So I don't know if it's about anything specific to the race or to a bigger picture, or it could be something that's nothing to do with Formula One at all. But knowing that Günther wants to escape pretty quickly tonight, it must be pretty important.
Hey, Chris, you talked about Pietro on the Wednesday show, and he was so great. Wasn't it fantastic to have him for the full hour of the show? That insight that he gave us was fantastic.
Yeah, he's a really, really good talker, really good at explaining things. I won't compliment him too much because he just walked by again so he can hear it. He's very, very good. And he was very honest and open and gave us, you know, opinions on pretty much everything. So, yeah, it was one of those where it was a big help for him to join us. We have some movement now with Haas team members in travel kit, so they are ready to go. Like I said, they want to get out of here pretty quickly. And I am just going to try and see who's coming through. Because how long have we got till we're going off air?
We're down to 2 minutes. We're almost out.
Yeah, we might be beaten by this one. But if we are, then I'll try and grab someone for the midweek show, like you said. So when we record pre-Monaco, we can tell everyone what went wrong with us.
Well, guys, we are almost out of time. Any final thoughts on today's race?
Great Spanish Grand Prix. What a season.
Yeah, what a season.
Yeah, definitely not predictable.
Yeah. You agree, Bob?
Absolutely. Yeah, I thought it was a fun race. On to Monaco.
That's right. On to Monaco. That's a nice way to wrap this up.
Sailing.
Yeah. Okay. So you say on to Monaco. Any predictions, early predictions, Bob?
Yep. I'm going to arrive on a cruise ship and I'm going to have a great time all weekend.
That's the best prediction
I've
heard.
That is a fantastic prediction. Chris Medlin, thanks, buddy. We appreciate you hunting everybody down for us today. Was fantastic.
Thank you very much. I'm going to go and find some after sun and try and make my cool down by the time we're back on air in Monaco.
Go hydrate, my friend.
There you go. Travel safe, y'all.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in. Of course, if you want to follow us on social media, go to our website, speedcitybroadcast.com, because we got lots of good information up there. Thanks everybody who tuned in on YouTube and Facebook today. And we'll talk to you next Sunday.
Happy trails.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.